I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on how I got here, because I'm not an expert. Nobody becomes like a Charlotte Mason expert. There's no training for that. It's just something I learned about and fell in love with, and it met the desires for our family. I do have an education background. I taught for many years, kindergarten to second grade. How I've learned most of what I know is from y'all, from the other moms in my life sitting at tables that are like-minded. And I say that, but that changes over the years, and y'all will find that, you know. And it's sad to think, but a lot of the people that I was really close friends with when I had babies, you grow and you change and you make decisions for your family that don't match the other family's decisions, and you still love each other, but maybe you're not spending as much time together. And I wish somebody had told me that then, because I felt that was hard to not break those friendships, but for those friendships to change. But it's lovely, and then you get in your groove and you find your people. Like I said, I'm not an expert. Please ask questions if I say something and you're like, what is she talking about? I do think it's a gift to have an educator background. All I ever wanted to do was be a mom. In fact, I did not even want to go to college. I don't know what I was going to do, but I just wanted to be a mom. And teaching was such great preparation for that, in positive and negative ways, because you see a lot in the classroom. So what I always knew is that I wanted something different for my family than what the world was telling me I was supposed to have or supposed to do. And my mom had sort of made some of those same choices raising me. I'm an only child, but she did not know Charlotte Mason. She didn't know classical education. She didn't know. She was just going off of what God had given her. And I will say, you have everything you need. You have every tool you need to be an awesome mom, because God is a perfect parent and he created you in his image. But then Adam and Eve came along, and so now we have to work a little bit harder to be those parents. But, you know, we may spank in anger and we may yell at our kids and do all of those things, but we have the word to bring us right back. But God did create you. You have everything you need. So don't let the world tell you you don't. My mom made the choice to not send me to formal schooling until first grade. I did like maybe a mother's morning out, and so I wanted the same thing for my children. But then all my neighbors started talking about preschool. Where are you going to go? It's 2-day twos. You got to do 2-day twos, and then you'll do 3-day threes, and you'll do 4-day fours, and what are you going to do? And I've listened to that, and I thought, well, I better get on the ball and go to all these open houses for my, he wasn't even two yet, you know, because you have to make these decisions when they're like one. And I went to a couple of open houses, and the Lord just impressed so hardly on me that was not the right choice for our family. So we made the decision, we really laid into that, that we were not going to do preschool. And I actually ended up having to go back to work when Buck, our oldest, was 15 months old to teach. And it was a great blessing because it was a part-time. It was a Charlotte Mason school in Midtown. And but we just felt so convicted that our children were supposed to be at home. It was hard to find people to come into our home, but it was so worth it. And in fact, last night I asked my 11-year-old, I was like, am I just making all this up? Like, if I'm telling myself these lies because it's what I want to hear. It's like, Buck, where's your favorite place to be? And he was like, outside. I was like, yeah, but where? I forget what he said. Like, he was not following. He was not on the same track I was. I was like, but where? Like, anywhere in the world you could go and be, where would you go? And he was like, home. Like, duh. And I was like, okay, good. Like, I was hoping that was the answer, but I think we as parents, we really need to cultivate our homes so that our children want to be there. That's hard. It's hard to have people under you all the time, But I will tell you, because now I'm on the other side, it goes so fast. You will be, they will be in school before you know it. Don't rush it. I'm highly opinionated on that. If I offend you, I'm sorry. But I just, I feel so strongly about that. The world wants your children's hearts. By keeping them at home, you're their primary exposure. And if they have siblings, that's a great blessing. I tell my children that all the time because I did not. So I don't remember being especially lonely, although I tell them I was when they're arguing with each other. So they're like, you know, this is a great blessing that God gave you this brother. But they need to learn how to be friends with their siblings, and they need to learn how to play together with their siblings. But sort of the way my mom, these things that she instilled that now I'm sort of passing on that we need to be home to do are like reading good books. We read a lot. Being outside. My kids are outside all the, so Matthew McConaughey's mom had this rule, and I mean, you can't go wrong with trying to raise your kids like Matthew McConaughey, right? But if the sun's out, you're out. And so we've adapted that rule in our house. I mean, I probably read that in a People magazine 10 years ago. But that's our rule. If the sun is out, you're out. And then as the seasons change, that changes. When it's dark at 5 o'clock, it changes what we're doing during the day. And that's when we start reading more or we're playing games as a family. I always, always have a deck of cards in every bag I have. It is never too early to teach your child how to play war with a deck of cards. And they'll learn their numbers. But we love to celebrate. We love traditions. Nature studies is a Charlotte Mason philosophy, but it's literally just that, studying nature, being outside and collecting bugs. I keep every container, butter or sour cream or whatever container, and put it in a cabinet outside. So there's always somewhere to put bugs, not necessarily in the house. We love animals and seasons. And my two things, if anything ever happens to me, I ask my husband that he reads them the Bible and remembers to cut their fingernails. Other than that, anything else can go. But I don't do PowerPoints, but just a few books I do want to tell you about, and actually all of these are in the Perimeter bookstore. You can get so overwhelmed with parenting books. There is a book for everything, and really all you need is the Bible. Every answer is in there. But there's a few others that I did not read in the correct order. And so I hope it's a gift that y'all could do this. The first one, that this is in the order of the way I would read them, is Mother's Heart by Jean Fleming. It is so sweet, y'all. She wrote this first in like 1984 and then revised it in 1996, 97. And she actually did not make any changes. It's tried and true. Sweet, sweet, sweetness. This is before phones and technology, so she was not up against that. So that is not in here, which is a huge thing that we're up against. But there's one more copy of this in the bookstore, but this is also on Amazon. The next one is Shepherding a Child's Heart by Ted Tripp, which y'all have probably heard. I read this way too early. I wish that I had waited and read this more like the first grade ages, like 5, 6, because in those little years, you are just, I hate to say saying no a lot, because you need to say yes too, but it's just training, and then you can start the heart. Like there is no heart-brain connection until about 6-ish. And then the last one, go ahead and get this on your bookshelf, is The Age of Opportunity by Paul David Tripp, who is Ted Tripp's brother. Wouldn't you like to meet that mama? I mean, she knew something. Age of Opportunity. This is sometimes sold as a book to not read till your children are in middle school. I don't agree with that. We read this last year when our oldest was in fourth grade, and it's a fantastic book. You could read it now, because everywhere where it says teenager, you could actually put your own name in there, because I don't know about you, but I'm struggling with the same sins. And then this one, Paul David Tripp, again, just called Parenting. And this is kind of an anytime. And this is a good one, too, because it gives some, like, if A happens, try B. If B happens, try C. So this is a great one, too. All right. Let me look at my notes here. So back to just what we really realized, that in order to instill these things that were that we held as important, and that we believed that we were supposed to do. I mean, we believe that this through prayer, that this is how we were supposed to raise our family, but that we needed to be the primary influences in their lives, not because we're perfect. Actually, the exact opposite, because we're sinful, and they could see our need for Jesus. It's hard when your child comes home at any age and tells you about something that happened, and for you to have to tell them that that other person needs Jesus. It's much easier in your own home. Be like, yes, that's, I need Jesus. I was never called to homeschool. That was not on my heart. And part of that, I think, was just naturally I wanted them to have the influences of others when the time was right. And this is just a little thing I have. If your child is home and they're under the age of six, you're not homeschooling them. That's just natural. They're just supposed to be home, and they're just supposed to play and be exposed to life and say, what letter does this word start with? That's not homeschooling. That's just my opinion. But schooling really should not start until 5 or 6. And if they have a summer birthday, it can even be later. You can buy yourself a year. So anyways, I learned, oh, and I'll also say this. We've made it. We have an 11-year-old. Made it all this time with no, we don't have iPads. We don't have phones. We don't have any video games. They are totally normal children. I will say, like, I worried, like, especially as Buck got older, when he goes to a friend's house and they're playing, I can't even think of a video game name or whatever, PlayStation, whatever it is. And he doesn't know how to do it. Is he going to be outcasted? And then we were like, oh, who cares if he is? If that's what he's outcasted for, then let him be outcasted for that. They just, and now it's, because it's not part of our life, they don't ask for it. We, I don't know if y'all know this, they re-released the Nintendo from like the 80s last Christmas, 80s, 90s, and it's this little bitty box and it comes already made with like 200 games. And so we were like, this will be fun. We'll get this for him because it's not that, it's not new tech. I mean, it's literally the old technology. They never play it. Fred and I play it. Like they go to bed and we're like, gonna, you know, Gridiron or whatever that football game is. My husband is like, it all came back. Mario Brothers, it all comes back. but the boys never asked for it because it's just they've gotten to a point in life where it never became a habit. And so it's just, it's not in their wheelhouse to even ask for it. So about 12 years ago, I learned about this person, Charlotte Mason. And the handouts on your table, which you don't have to look at yet, are Charlotte Mason inspired, which means nothing to you right now. But she was a British educator at the turn of the 20th century. So we're talking late 1800s, early 1900s. So she's educating in a very, very different time and space. She was not up against, I mean, there have always been challenges, right? Biblical times there were challenges, but she was not up against a lot of the things we're up against. But what her big belief is that children are born people, that they're born with everything you have right now that you were born with, that they should be respected as such, that they should not be dumbed down or talked down to or assumed that they cannot do anything, that we need to do everything for them, that we need to teach them how to do it. And one of the big things I'm going to talk about today is habit training, and that is so broad. So one of the things you have are her lists of habits. And there is a habit for everything you can think of, and it's completely overwhelming. But what I want to do for just a second, I want you to take a minute at your table to think about what all you did to get here this morning. Literally from the moment you woke up until you walked into this building, from getting out of bed, making your bed, if you make your bed, brushing your teeth, eating, getting dressed, just run through the things you did and just who helped you learn how to do that? How did you learn to brush your teeth or make your bed? So just take a few minutes to talk amongst yourselves. All right. So just by calling out, where did you learn the things that got you here today? Anyone? Your mom? Parents? Siblings? Pardon? The dentist. Right? Anything else? Sesame Street? So Sesame Street, mom, dad, siblings. So where was that taking place? In the home. Just the most important place to be, in the home. This is what Charlotte Mason says about habits. Just as it is, on the whole, easier for the locomotive. Oh, let me say, this book is called Laying Down the Rails. I have mixed emotions about this book. The only place you can get it is from this website called Simply Charlotte Mason, which they're actually local. This is local family. If this really sparks something in your heart and you want to learn more about this, which I would love, and I'd love to talk to you more about it, this is a great book. If not, this can be a very overwhelming book, because those lists of habits, that's what this is. And Charlotte Mason's theory is that you pick one habit to work on at a time. I find that completely impossible. But I think a lot of that was her time. I mean, you could work on one thing at a time. Now I feel, things are coming at us really fast. So that's the locomotive analogy to laying down the rails, which is what we're doing as moms. Just as it is on the whole easier for the locomotive to pursue its way on the rails than to take a disastrous run off them, so it is easier for the child to follow lines of habit carefully laid down than to run off these lines at his peril. It follows that this business of laying down lines towards the unexplored country of the child's future, it is a very serious and responsible one for the parent. It rests with him to consider well the tracks over which the child should travel with profit and pleasure, and along those tracks, to lay down lines so invitingly smooth and easy that the little traveler is going upon them at full speed without stopping to consider whether or not he chooses to go in that way. No pressure, but it does fall on us. And ultimately, it's going to make your life so much easier when your child does know how to independently brush their teeth or make their food. They can learn that at a very young age. My mom gives me the hardest time over this. I'm not a morning person. I do not wake up with a lot of energy. Buck, who's my first, wakes up starving still to this day. So when he was two, I taught him how to use a toaster so he could get frozen waffles out of the freezer and toast them and eat them. And that was a habit that was created, and he's still at 11. I do not have to make his breakfast. Again, it's a little bit because of my laziness, but it just helped our family run smoother. When we think of habit training overall, I think we think of it as kind of the big numbers. Come on in, have a seat. Good morning. Sorry. But we think of them as simple pursuits, right? Obeying the first time, being quiet at appropriate times, no drawing on the walls or furniture, which still is sometimes an issue. I don't know what the exploration in that is, but no whining, no fussing, no touching breakables and sit still and all these things, and we're constantly. But we need to retrain the way that we think about that, because they don't, while they come knowing, because they're already persons, a friend of mine said this to me years ago, they have all the mobility and zero sense. And that's so true. And we can totally wear ourselves out by saying no constantly and no and give me that, because they want to do what we're doing. They want to do what their older siblings are doing. So some of this is just retraining yourself too on how your home is set up. And I really do think in the long run it does pay off. But some of the examples, you know, like they want, when you're in the kitchen, they want the knife. When the older sibling is riding a bike, they want that bike. They don't want their tricycle. They want the bike. They want to hold the glass because you're drinking out of a glass. They want to hold the glass. They want the toy. They want to throw the rock. They want to run through the parking lot. They want to do themselves the buckles or open the fridge and get the food or vacuum or sweep or whatever. And we are saying, no, no, no. You will not. I'm not going to talk about the phone. I see children all the time crying and screaming for the phone. And it breaks my heart. Just don't even make it an option. No option. They want the phone for two reasons. One, because they see you on it all the time. Y'all, I'm on my phone. They see you on it all the time, A, and B, you have things on your phone to entertain them. Take them off. If there's nothing on your phone that they're interested in, they won't want the phone. If they're looking at pictures on your phone, that's a totally different thing. There's no reason. And if they're screaming for your phone, it's because they're addicted to it. Your little child is addicted. The first year where you really, obviously I'm very, very passionate about this, but that first year where you very careful about what the food that went into their bodies, I was like over the top with my first, like all organic. It was ridiculous. I will not be doing that this time around. But so you're so careful about what goes into their bodies, but then something happens and we don't become so careful about what's going into their brains, which ultimately affects their hearts. There are thousands of other things you can hand your child to entertain them rather than this. Their brains are rewired. It will cause problems as they get older. I saw it in the classroom. There was a shift in the way children were able to attend for long periods of time. They weren't. And I taught for 17 years. That's not 40 years. I can't imagine what these teachers that have taught for 40 years have seen. But when I started teaching, it wasn't an issue. Kids were just happier. Something has shifted and changed, and we have the opportunity to shift it back this generation. So I don't even talk about the phone, because I just believe it shouldn't even be an option. But so, you know, you come up with things like talk to them like a real person. If they're screaming for something, maybe you really don't know what it is. Maybe you're just assuming you know what it is, and talk to them and tell them to use their big girl or big boy voice. And if they can't, they can go to their room till they can come out and talk to you, because they're created to talk to you in a normal voice. So expect that from them. So they want to cook their own food. Well, come up with a way for them to cook their own food or make their own whatever. If you're chopping vegetables for dinner and they want to do that, and not even if they want to do that, they should learn. These are life skills. Create their own drawer in the kitchen with a cutting board and a butter knife, and give them a piece of lettuce to cut. I mean, let them be a part of every process you do. There is a safe way to do it. Create a place, you know, like with the when the refrigerator, I remember thinking like, we need to put a lock on the refrigerator. Well, what if they had a shelf in the refrigerator with their cup and whatever that they could get to? I mean, you don't want them in there 24/7, but rather than have it, just find ways to not have to say no all the time. Teach them how to walk through a parking lot. Maybe they just don't want to hold your hand. That doesn't mean they're necessarily going to run away from you. Maybe they will. But teach them, you know, make it a game. You stop, and then they can walk when you say go, like red light, green light. They want to walk the dog. Put the dog on a leash, and you hold the leash and put some slack and let them grab it, and then guess what? They think they're walking the dog. the sibling thing, I know, can be when the older sibling's doing something that they want to do, we'll just come up with some ways to do it different. Monopoly, there's so many pieces of Monopoly, but let the little person sit in your lap. Or even yesterday, we were playing a game, my older son and I, a card game that my younger one just couldn't get. So he partnered with me. He didn't love that, but, you know, rather than me just saying, like, go away, go away, go do something else, which sometimes you do just want to do. But I think that if we set the expectations here for our children at any age, they'll meet them. And if we set them here, they'll meet those too. So it's your choice. You can do everything in the world for your child and totally wear yourself out. Or you can teach them how to open their own snacks, how to clean the sink out. We do actually learn this from Rebecca a little. But we do Saturday chores. I was totally overwhelmed with chores in our house, because I want them to learn these things, A. B, I want their help. We do not pay for chores. I don't get paid for chores. And I don't want them to become husbands that think they need to get paid for helping their wives. So we do Saturday morning chores. I mean, there are things during the week that we instilled as habits of picking up your clothes after you take them off or whatever, or coming home from school and immediately putting everything away. But Saturday morning, they each have their little list of chores that they do, and nothing else happens until those are done. And that's up to them. If they, you know, they just can't do anything fun until those chores are done. So, but all of that to say, I know I can be very opinionated about some things. You have to do what works best for your family. Prayerfully, you and your husband can be on the same page with these things. I'm very blessed that my husband just kind of lets me take the rein on a lot of the, I mean, he totally steps in when needed with parenting, but a lot of the big decisions, he's not home during the day. I've got to figure out how to run my home so that there's peace. And while the TV gives me a little bit of peace, ultimately, it's when I have to tell them to turn it off, it's chaos and there's tears. And so we just do no TV during the week. And Fridays, I know it's different when you have people at home all the time. But even with that, be really careful about what they're watching on TV. I know like PBS is probably pretty safe, but as they get older, and especially with the Netflix and Amazon options, do not give your child free rein to that. Preview everything before they watch it. And we do. I mean, we totally watch. We're not like living in this bubble, although I would love to live in a bubble. But we do watch TV. I mean, we do normal people things. And like I said, because we sort of decided these things when our people were little, they're just not issues now. Our 11-year-old has not asked for a phone. And I know a lot of the kids in his grade, they have phones. And they're begging for them. And recently he had a valid point, because he goes fish. He can walk from our house to a pond to go fish. And he was like, but what if something happens? Well, you know what? We trained him what to do if something happens. Here are the neighbors that we know. You can go to their house and knock on their door and get their, you know, ask them to make a phone call. They're not learning how to problem solve anymore. Parents are doing all the problem solving with them. And we're not really even problem solving anymore. I mean, I'm addicted to Waze. I grew up across the street. We live in the house I grew up in. I do not leave the driveway without putting where I'm going in Waze. My husband is like, what is the deal? But Waze knows things I don't know. But what if I run into traffic? I figure it out, right? But I think we've just given in to this. We don't have to think much anymore. So this is so funny because this list I printed out of these habits, it gives you a little like definition of each habit, and it didn't give a definition for fortitude, which fortitude is one of my favorite habits to talk about. The habit of fortitude is doing something that makes you uncomfortable. So I think something else that our culture has moved into is that we find it And it is, I mean, we all know it is easier to go through Target, and it's actually kind of fun to go through Target by yourself. It's like a little vacation. But what could your child learn from going through Target with you, or going to the grocery store with you, or doing all of those things with you? We have relationships with the people at the bank, the people at the dry cleaners. I'm trying to think where we go regularly. They know my boys. My boys know them, and they learn how to look them in the eye and talk to them and say thank you and take them a little gift at Christmas and how to pay. I try to sometimes have cash, not just so they don't see a card all the time. Giving them jobs at the grocery store. And this can start as little as like 2 years old, that, you know, you walk down an aisle and stand before the cereal and say, where are the Cheerios? Put the Cheerios in the, I mean, these are life skills that if you're not teaching them, they won't learn. They don't learn how to grocery shop in school. Back to the habit of fortitude, I think we avoid a lot because it's maybe uncomfortable for not only us, but we think, oh, they can't sit through that. Oh, the Christmas service at church, they can't sit through that. Well, of course they can, if you don't believe they can, or you don't train them how to do it. And then when do you say, okay, now they can? I mean, again, you know your child. Every child is different. But it is never too early to start those kinds of trainings, life skills. Elizabeth Elliot is somebody else who, she was a missionary's wife, and she has several books but there's one called The Shaping of a Christian Family, and it's a very, very rich, good book. But she's just a wise, wise woman. But she talks a lot about that, about your children are watching you. You're their primary source of influence. What are you teaching them? And that just made me think of something else. Oh, I know. Also in there with the habits, I joke that say the two ways I learned to parent, because, you know, the Bible is assuming you are the primary source of influence. I mean, God created you to have children and raise them. But I joke, but not really, but I also learned I want to mother like Ma Ingalls. And so I found online, it's like these 10 parenting tips from Laura Ingalls. They're actually from the show, not the books. And the show was a little, and it's funny, like now if I watch one, I'm like, that was a little racy. Laura. But you know, I mean, there are things like, they had one cup. Each person in the family had one cup. Y'all, would that not make life so much easier? If you just had one cup and every night everybody washed their cup and had it for the next day? We don't do that, but I do have dreams of doing that. Or a plate. Like, what if we never had to run our dishwasher? I mean, we just use. So, I mean, she does have some really sweet little parenting tips on how they handled things. But a lot of it was just walking alongside their children and teaching them how to be, not just an adult, but just be a person. Does anybody have any questions about habit training or anything you saw on this lengthy, lengthy list of all the habits that you're supposed to be instilling in your child? It's never too late. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. We do something every day. Yeah. Right. Now, I think it's never too late. I mean, even as adults, we pick up new habits by what we're exposed to. I mean, if we start hanging out with somebody, another mom, and she puts coconut almond milk in her coffee every day, then we think, oh, well, we should start doing that. And we start doing it too. I mean, it's never too late to learn a new habit. Sometimes it's easier when they're a little bit older. But I think it needs to be a conversation, back to treating them like a person. Tell them why you're doing this, or why you're at that age, when they're really little, less talk, more action. They cannot understand what you're saying. And you don't always need to say no if they have something in their house that, I mean, in their hand that they should not have. You don't need to say no. You can just take it from their hands and put something they can have in there. Because no becomes, it just, they don't even hear it anymore. But I think when they're older, in that 7, 8, I mean, that's a sweet conversation. I'm teaching you this because you're going to be a wife or a husband, prayerfully, one day, and then you're going to be a mom, and this is going to help. And you're maybe going to leave my house when you're only 18. My gosh, that's like not that far from now. Actually, 19, because we did a gift year on the front end for both of them. But you're going to need, like, and you know what? I think that's something, back to the problem solving. I mean, I am older than a lot of you in this room, but I can't even remember. I don't think I had a cell phone in college. I think I had a car phone and my dorm room phone. And if a problem arose in college, or think to your mom, she didn't have a car phone. She probably didn't even have a dorm bedroom phone. There's probably a hall phone that they stood in line to use. So if a problem arose with a friend or a boyfriend or a teacher, what did they do? They had to figure it out. And now we're just so connected. And I know I'm totally guilty of it too. If something happens, I immediately want to contact somebody and get their advice. Like, we've sort of moved away from this just sitting with things that stir us and waiting for God to tell us what to do. We want an instant fix. And we're sending our kids off to college still totally connected to us. And I mean, listen, like, when I think about my boys leaving, it hurts my heart. Like, I cannot imagine. Of course, now I'm starting over, so I'm not going to be alone. We're not going to be alone for a really, really long time. But we've got to give them these life skills. And if the earlier you start, the easier it's going to make life, because life happens so fast, and the things that are coming at us now with a fifth grade son are, like, I'm so glad that I prepared him in these ways, because now we're having to deal with these things. You move from sort of this physical stuff to emotional really fast. And it's crazy. But because some of the physical stuff is done, he can wash his clothes. I don't make them do it, but I've taught them how to do it. It's easy. It's just easier for me to do it. But if I'm not there and they need the baseball pants, they know how to wash them. You know, I've like shoe tying. Please teach your children how to tie shoes before they go to school. But I found, like, just recently, I mean, my 7-year-old absolutely knows how to tie his own shoes. But in the morning, he had started asking me to do it. And I had just, without thinking, started to do it. And then it became a habit for him to quit tying his shoes. That was my fault. And then finally the other day, I was like, no, wait, you got me. You tricked me. You know how to do this. But you're just better at it. Well, guess practice makes perfect. Keep practicing. Anything else? Yeah. Right? Yeah. I remember, and a lot of you probably do this, but the kitchen was a big, I did not want to have to lock up everything in my house. So I chose to teach my children what they could get, which cabinet they could get into and which they couldn't. So as early as, like, you know, whatever, I don't, like, y'all help, I don't even remember, when does a child start crawling? But when they start crawling or moving or sitting up, like, we had a cabinet in the kitchen that was just, and I had to, at the end of day, put everything back in it, but it was Tupperware, wooden spoons, plastic bowls that they could get into, and they could pull everything out, and they could chew on it or whatever, and that was their cabinet. And that's a little baby. I never childproofed my home, and my mom didn't either, so I knew that's just something I just learned from her. The child is coming into our life. We are not entering the child's life. So the child needs to learn to live amongst us. And so just teaching them, you know, and it really doesn't take that long. I mean, I remember for a while setting up a pack and play in the living room where maybe some more like non-touchable things are. And this is kind of funny. So instead of, I had this pack and play there for a while. I haven't really thought about this correlation. And then it got a rug, and I have boys, so it was one of those rugs you see like at Costco or wherever, Target, that's like the, you know, the air, the tracks on it, and then made the rug. And so the rug is in our living space, but the rug is where all the child's things stay. John is seven. I still say, go to your rug. He still, like, goes to his rug. That's where everything stays on his rug. And he, when he wakes up in the morning, he goes to his rug. I'm not eager to change that. I mean, I know, like he's certainly at some point not going to go to the rug anymore. He did tell me the other day, though. He was like, because I've said the rug will become your sister's rug. And he said, I'm not quite ready to give my rug up. Can she have her own rug? But he doesn't play with anything else. He's not interested in the other stuff because he has his own space with his own stuff. And that's been his whole existence in this. We weren't in this house when we had Buck, but his whole existence. We just don't, and a lot of it is a space thing too, the way our house is laid out. And I did not want my home to become like this overtaken, this for you to walk in and it looked like a child's home. So that was just our choice to keep things compact, and we don't have a place on the main living area for there to be a playroom or anything like that. So, yeah, it's never too early to start. Anything else? So I was going to talk about one other habit. This is a mental, and this is just something that's dear to my heart, but is about reading to your child. And just statistically, what happens when you do read to your child. Read to them every day, every age. We are still reading aloud to the 11-year-old. I don't foresee that ever stopping. He loves it. He would still sit for hours and be read to. It's gotten a little bit tricky with the age difference because he and I are going through a series that is too old for the younger one. But it's a really, really sweet time for the older one and I to have together. Choose good books. And Charlotte Mason does a whole piece on choosing good books. She uses a word called twaddle, T-W-A-D-D-L-E, twaddle. And it's basically another word for crap. Can I say that? My children can't say it. For just junk books. Or now I even align it to TV shows. I mean, what you're choosing to let them, I mean, there's a lot of junk out there. But when I first learned about this, it was kind of life-changing for me. I mean, I literally went and went through all of our books and got rid of everything that is twaddle. I don't read on a Kindle or a device because I don't have one, but I think it's very important for your children to see you with a real book in your hand, turning pages. We've just sort of placed books all over our house, but in our, you know, our living room has a basket of books. In the breakfast room where they eat breakfast, there's a stack of books. And as your children get older, magazines, I mean, Highlights, we all had Highlights. Highlights, National Geographic does a kids' version. Now for my older son, he gets Boy's Life, which is like a scouting magazine. I will say, he asked for National Geographic. Okay, that has taken a turn. Yeah. Do not get National Geographic in your home. It's crazy. But it's developing this print-rich environment so that there's just always that opportunity for exposure to books. I mean, books can take you places that you can't physically go. when they learn to, when they become really interested in something, dinosaurs or trucks or whatever it is, go get some books. Go to the library and get books. Take them to Fernbank. Don't sit them in front of, what is the dinosaur show on PBS? Dinosaur Train. Yeah. Oh, you love dinosaurs. Here, watch this. You know, I mean, make it, it's real. Like, make that come to life. Find a construction site and go and sit and watch the machines work. What's something that girls get into? I don't know. Yeah. Go to the, right. Yes. And if you don't want to drive to the zoo, go to Autrymoe Nature Center. Right down Old Alabama. They have animals there. Yes. Right. That's such a cool place. Right. Right. So like drive that. If you're going on a trip, learn about where you're going before you go. Get books. Talk about it. Teach them the history of it. Just make these things come to life. Also, add that dimension, you know, I used to work in, the school where I taught was in Midtown, and the boys went, and we lived out here, and so for 8 years made that drive, and now I'm like, I ain't never going inside the perimeter again in my life, but whenever possible to add a third dimension to books, look at what's playing at the Center for Puppetry Arts. Read that book to your child before you go. You know your child better than anybody else, so you know their hearts. If animals dying is really upsets them, then monitor that. Don't make them watch Bambi or whatever. But we found that in our house, when all chaos broke loose, when the boys are fighting, even still at 11 and 7, when they're fighting, when they're, which this is another weird thing I do. We're not allowed to use the word bored in our house. It is equal to a bad cuss word because it is impossible in this day and age and in this world, in this life, to be truly bored. Our kids will never know what that even means or looks like. And if they say they're bored because you won't let them watch TV, then good. Let them sit in their boredom and figure it out, because they will. But when chaos ensues and we're just all falling apart, pick up a book and sit on the couch and let them come to you. If you have a child that does not sit, let them play Legos on the floor or play with their dollhouse while you're reading. Just hearing your voice, there's nothing sweeter to them. So I was laughing because I was thinking, the previous school where I was, it was a 30-minute a day required reading, parent to child. And I remember first thinking, like, 30 minutes, that's nothing. Like, we do that all the time. And I get, like, our two picture books and go sit down and read, and it was, like, 7 minutes. And I was like, oh. But, you know, like, when they're around 4, start chapter books. Read a chapter, and then the next day pick it up. Like, to watch them get excited about that. And that also gives them something to play, like pretend, which children, they don't know how to do that anymore either. When you're reading, you know, Charlotte's Web, I forget, something just recently happened about Wilbur, and one of my boys was like, oh, like the pig in Charlotte's Web, we haven't read that in 5 years, but they still remembered that. They are also, if any of you have been to Serenby Farm, which is south of Atlanta, it's still in Fulton County, which is crazy, but it's about an hour away, but they do an amazing children's play every summer, and last summer was Robin Hood, and you go out into the woods, and they reenact it, and so we always read that book, whatever the summer book is going, or the summer play is going to be, we read that book leading up to it. It is getting harder to read, because fifth grade is no joke. Like, I am exhausted from fifth grade. It's just a lot of projects and papers and studying, and that happened really fast. And so I miss those times of just being able to dive in a good book with my kids. One thing I love to do is go to Goodwill, people get rid of fantastic books, and you can go there and buy them for 25 cents or 50 cents. I mean, I don't want you to think I'm trying to get you to go spend money, but it is great for them to have books accessible in their bedrooms. Or if they wake up at 6 a.m. and you don't want to get up till 6:30, they can have 30 minutes to read their books in their room. It's never too early to start that. Put books in their cribs. And if they eat them, who cares? They will not die. But that's just something really dear to my heart. And that's a Charlotte Mason.
Can you kind of use the reading if they've not done it? Can you kind of use it as a reward? Like, for example, Jumanji comes out December 15th.
Yeah.
Could you buy the Jumanji book and read to them?
I always do that.
And then say, well, once we get done with the book, then we're going to go see the movie, and that kind of be a reward.
That's exactly what we do, especially for movies that were books first, because I want my children to know these were books. These were rich, good books first. Most all the Disney stories are not Disney books. They're actually real, rich, amazing literature, not always with happily ever after at the end. And if you don't want to read, some of them are difficult to read, like Peter Pan is an excellent book by J.M. Barrie, B-A-R-R-I-E. We listen to that on tape. It's not, obviously not on tape anymore, but whatever it's on. But we listen to it all the time. It's a beautiful story, but it's the British vernacular is used. It's difficult for me to read. Some of you may be able to do that. But all of those Disney stories actually came from beautiful fairy tales and books. And in fact, we love Disney World. That's kind of our one like big pop culture thing we love to do. As your children get older, you all have little people, but there's a series of books called Famous Americans and Famous Young Famous Americans. It basically, they're biographies, but they started these famous people's childhoods. And so several years ago, before we went to Disney World, we read Walt Disney's biography, and it completely changed the way we looked at Disney World. I mean, Disney World is literally modeled after the town that Walt grew up in. I mean, down to the barber shop designed exactly. I mean, it was just fascinating. And then it brought this whole different dimension of this just isn't this, you know, fairy tale made up place. Like, this was a real person that did this, that has a good story. So anything like that that you can make come to life. And some of it, you know, I know it's hard to preview movies. I don't know if y'all know about the, there's an app called, it's a focus on the family, Plugged In. Thank you. It's an app that focus on the family endorses, and it rates and gives everything you need to know about the movie you're going to see. Even like, I mean, sometimes I do kind of giggle because it's, you know, like profanity, and it will be like bottom. Or whatever, but maybe that's a word you don't want your children to know. So, I mean, it sometimes is pretty extreme, but it's a great place to check stuff out before you take them to go see the movies, just to make sure it's wise. Anybody have any other questions? So, Charlotte Mason's theory on twaddle, which you can totally Google twaddle and come up with, okay, well, maybe don't Google twaddle. I don't know what you'd come up with. But so it's living books is what she uses, living books. So it's things that are good, true, excellent, real. I'm going to give you some examples of twaddle, and you may be like, oh, we have every one of those. Okay, every Disney book is twaddle. Sorry. Help me, moms. Captain Underpants is twaddle. Y'all wouldn't be there yet. There's so many kid books. Pardon? Yes. Except that there's morals, but yes. And no, Dr. Seuss is actually not twaddle. Well, a lot of it is just, is there something better? Like, what is richer or better? In fact, I was thinking, I was like, I should start a business and go into people's houses. Take all their twaddle away and go on a trip to Goodwill and show you what is not twaddle, which I would actually love to do. I'm happy to do that with anybody. I love books. It's quite an issue. I know what else I thought of one. This is a tricky one. Curious George, because the author of Curious George, Ray, he's dead now, but has written so many books, like wonderful, wonderful books, but we only know him as Curious George. But Curious George, a lot of those came out, 50 years ago. It's just kind of taken a turn to twaddle. So some of those are tricky. All the, princess books. I mean, there's so much rich stuff out there. Something you can do is you can go on, you could just Google, classical reading lists. I'm not sure or living book reading lists. Somebody has probably created one. I'll tell you, there are, there are diehard Charlotte Mason people. I want you to be careful about just Googling Charlotte Mason stuff because it's a huge homeschool thing. Yeah.
I found a list for I'm so sorry.
No, please do. Really, it's anything that was written before the 60s is good stuff. When the 60s hit, things started to take a little bit of a turn. But there's lots of good new stuff, too. I was going to say, same thing with previewing movies. Preview the books as well, because even Babar has a gay uncle. They don't come out and say, but it would be obvious to you, and if it's an older child, even if your child is very curious and might ask, why are those two men living, whatever. But what has happened is that these fabulous books that were written 50 and 60 years ago, the son or the daughter decided to keep writing the books and is just let some stuff in, some subjects in there that you may not be ready for your child to learn. It's not funny, but this was probably five-ish years ago. We were at Costco, and we were going through that cattle line to get out. And my oldest, who was 6 or 7 at the time, goes, "Mom, I just feel so gay today, don't you?" And I was like, "What?" But that's because in the books that we're reading, that word has a completely different meaning. Right, right. And so, which is, I was like, yes, I do. I wanted him at that time, that's exactly what that word means. Most all nonfiction books are good too. Again, if they're really into the clips or stars or whatever, most of those are good, because I just thought of, what's that line of books that people sell now? At craft fairs and stuff, they're set up selling books. Usborne. Most of those, although they're all, it's new, most of those are some really good books. See, I don't want you to hear me say that everything that comes out now is junk and twaddle. It's not. There's some good, rich stuff. There's some, especially for older kids, there are some great chapter books that have come out recently that are great. But there is a lot more. And honestly, if you go to Barnes & Noble, most of what they have is the twaddle and the junk. So most of what your child is seeing is that. Again, there's good stuff. There's this little bitty section there of, they call it classics. It's good stuff, but it's teeny tiny. Honors reading list. Yeah. It's a little bit tricky to find. Go to the Perimeter School website, and then you go under Parents, and then it's like Parent Resources. Oh, yeah, there's a search. There's a search place, too, on the website. Right. Right. And you know what? If you, because I have, I have tons of reading lists. If y'all want to give me, if somebody wants to just start a, like, pass around with your email address on it, I'm happy to send you links to lists of books. Well, if you want to do make-believe, like read fairy tales, read Aesop's Fables, read Uncle Wiggily. It's a really sweet book. Right. Well, it's not bad. It's just not real. And they just need to know it's not real. Right. I am maybe too real with my children. I'm sure y'all couldn't pick up on that at all. Okay, Harry Potter is a really, like, tricky... Harry Potter is considered twaddle, yes. But. And there's a lot of buts in books. That's actually the series that my older son and I are reading through right now. But he's old enough to know and comprehend. But here's the thing. You can find Jesus in everything. You just got to look and you got to be able to... So, like, we have found Jesus in Harry Potter. And so we just have to, like, that has to be an ongoing conversation. And even, you know, I mean, he knows magic is not real. One other quick thing I want to tell you is, so Christmas is coming, or holidays are just, like, my favorite. But, so for Christmas books, this is, like, one of my most favorite things to do. I love Christmas books. But if you can come up with and just start collecting, you have years of, I mean, we still do this, to get 25 books and 25 Christmas books. Again, go to Goodwill. And then over Thanksgiving, my husband and I, wrap those 25 books and put them under a little tree down in the boys' room. And each night, they open a book from December 1st on. The last book, I try to, you know, always make it, like, a specific book. But, and then that's the book we read. Actually, I'm not being totally honest. I wrap 50 books. But I don't expect anybody to do that. This has been years of, like, knowing I was going to do this. And my mom kept most all of my books from when I was a child. So I have double. But I also, I'm going to send that to y'all, too, like, some great Christmas books. I also have... this is like shameless self-promotion, but I have an Instagram called Joyfully Simple Living, and I do put books on there, especially during the holidays at Christmas time. Like, I'll put the books we open each day. And I just constantly, like, my Amazon cart is always full of books that I want, and when I find an extra $10 in the budget, I go and buy a book real quick before it slips away. Because books are a generational investment. Like I just said, I have the books that my mom saved from when I was little. Keep those books for your grandchildren in your house or give them to your son or daughter when they become parents. I mean, you won't regret buying books. Yeah? Y'all can probably guess what I say. Santa comes. There are presents on Christmas morning. But in a lot of that, y'all, my oldest just made it really easy. He's very black and white. And when he was 3 and a half, we were going down the stairs to his bedroom at Christmas, and we have that elf. The elf is just more like a fun, like every morning you get up and look for the elf, not the magic part of it. I mean, like even when Buck was 6 months old, my husband hid the elf like for me in the mornings. He would die if he knew I told y'all that. But we were walking down the stairs, and Buck was like, "Mom, look, there's my husband. That's so weird." That is too funny. So, that's hilarious. Oh, we have a parent conference coming up. That is hilarious. Anyway, so my older son was like, Mom, toys cannot become real and then not real. And I was like, you're right, they can't. I mean, I had been saying that forever, so now how am I all of a sudden like, and he was a little weirded out about like a man coming in the house while he was sleeping. So it just helped me. Like, I never had to lie or whatever. And I want them to only believe in Jesus. I never wanted to get to a place where I had to say, yes, I was not honest about that, but this is real. So, yeah. Right. And a lot of that is with books. Like, we have books to St. Nick, you know, of how, I mean, not every culture does Santa. I mean, they all have their own. So we read books on what different countries do. And that kind of, it naturally, some point, they'll start going like, oh, well, if we do Santa here in the United States, but in Norway or in Scandinavian countries, they're doing, like, the Tomte. He's like a gnome guy. Like, they're going to start putting stuff together. Like, oh, maybe this is, you know. But, I mean, it is tricky. And it just happened naturally for us. And our youngest one wants to believe so badly. He wants Santa to be real. And I don't say to him, like, well, he's not, too bad. I mean, it's not like that. It's just, I really don't give an answer at all. It just sort of naturally. And you can always go back with, well, what do you think? Right, and regardless of what you decide to do and how you decide to handle it in your family, always teach your children that every family does everything different. And because kids do talk, and at school, children in kindergarten in those young years, they don't just talk about Santa in December, they talk about him all year long. But it was harder for me as a teacher. The parent I always had to contact was the parent of the kid who looked at the other kid and said, Santa's not real. That was the parent I called. So just, and that's on everything, right? I mean, your child's going to go to another person's house and they don't have to clean up the food from their table or what. I mean, every family does everything different, and that's okay, and that's love and acceptance. But definitely in the Santa part, just, or any holiday for that matter, you know, this is how we do it in our home, and we don't talk about it at school. I know. Well, y'all have been awesome. I have to say, like, I did not sleep last night when I realized that I was speaking between Monty Starks last week and Carol Pope tonight. Go. But y'all have been awesome. But yeah, I'd love your emails and happy to send some lists. Yeah.
I'll just give you mine and then I'll put it out on social media.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Cool. I like that. Okay. And like I said, on that Joyfully Simple Living, I'll start around, I actually have some Halloween books that I keep meaning to put up on there because Halloween is a whole nother deal. We won't even go into that, but, you know, we don't totally ignore it. Thanks, y'all. Y'all are great moms. Everybody's doing a great job. I'm sure of it. Thank you.